This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 4th of November 2022. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are: Change Road call after latest death, new PM Sunak confirms U-turn on fracking ban, and sewage on street causing a stink. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, Heather.
Change Road call after latest death. The death of a woman in a traffic accident on a road which has seen a number of accidents in recent years has prompted calls for urgent changes. Local councillor Jackie Porter is pressing for a safer junction on the Kingsworthy Road where the tragedy happened, and she's calling for a roundabout at the Cart and Horses A33 junction, where a number of accidents have previously happened. On Tuesday, October the 25th, a woman died and a man was seriously injured following a collision between a Mazda and a Boxer van. The pair, both in their 70s, were taken to Southampton General Hospital, where shortly after, the woman was pronounced dead. A petition about 3 years ago gained 1,500 signatures, resulting in some road modifications, but campaigners say it made the layout worse. There have been a number of accidents in recent years involving emergency services call-outs and the death of a young man crossing the road in 2016. Councillor Porter said, "I have been campaigning for a safer junction here since 2014. It needs to be made safer. The junction was changed, but has since created even more confusion, and we continue to seek a roundabout there. But Hampshire County Council haven't considered the accident record is bad enough. Surely it is now." She said a previous request to lower the speed limit to 40 miles an hour was agreed, while CCTV was installed and a 40 miles an hour lit reminder sign was added. The week before the fatal collision, there had been another accident in which a car ended up on its roof, although there were no serious injuries. The fatal crash caused widespread congestion in the Kingsworthy area, worsened because Springvale Road had been closed for roadworks. Sergeant Chris Thompson from the Roads Policing Unit said, "We are carrying out initial inquiries to ascertain the exact circumstances which led to the tragic loss of a woman's life. We are keen to speak to anyone who was in the area at the time and witnessed the incident." The County Council has said that the accident record of the junction does not warrant major work such as a roundabout. The fatal crash sparked much comment on the Chronicle website. One reader, De Ferrier, wrote, "This junction goes against all common sense with regards to design and is not intuitive to drivers. The RTA rate should be screaming at Hampshire Highways to undo this precarious design. Not to do so would be arrant negligence." Southern View wrote, "It will probably only be changed during a project attached to something else. This way, no individual or team will be shown up as making the biggest mess of any traffic junction ever." Again, no one in whatever department in Hampshire County Council will take responsibility.
Let's have this story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, new Prime Minister Sunak confirms U-turn on fracking ban. Rishi Sunak has reintroduced the moratorium on fracking in England Downing Street has confirmed. The Prime Minister's official spokesman confirmed the move after Mr. Sunak was pressed on the issue at his first Prime Minister's questions. The PM told the Commons that he stands by the 2019 Conservative Party manifesto and has insisted his government will deliver on what was agreed upon at the UN COP26 Glasgow climate talks. Conservative former Prime Minister Liz Truss had lifted the ban, as she argued it would strengthen the country's energy supply. A Labour motion to ban fracking caused problems for Ms. Truss, as MPs were ordered to vote it down. Despite standing in the no lobby on the day, Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine said fracking for shale gas does not enjoy his support and labelled the motion as silly partisan politics. Mr. Brine insisted he wouldn't have supported any move to lift the moratorium as he believed in honouring the manifesto. Hampshire faced at least 9 new fracking sites. The total size of areas covered by a licence equated to 34,868 football pitches. Winchester was the worst affected area in the county, with 5 sites permitted for drilling, covering more than one quarter of the constituency. Rishi Sunak faced his first PMQs just 24 hours after taking on the top job, and speaking in the Commons, Green Party MP Caroline Lucas said he, Rishi Sunak, promised to fix her, Liz Truss's, mistakes, as well as to uphold the party's 2019 manifesto. So, if he's a man of his word, will he start by reversing the green light she gave to fracking since it's categorically not been shown to be safe, and instead maintain the moratorium that was pledged in that very manifesto that he promised to uphold? The Prime Minister replied, "I've already said I stand by the manifesto on that. But what I would say is that I'm proud that this government has passed the Landmark Environment Act, putting more protections for the natural environment than we have ever had, with a clear plan to deliver." Meanwhile, campaign group Friends of the Earth previously put together an interactive map showing the areas of England which were covered by onshore oil and gas licences. Many of the licensed areas overlapped with potential areas of fracking for shale gas identified by the British Geological Survey. And there's a picture here of a fracking site, but gratefully looking very deserted.
Over to Jane for the third headline story.
Yes, and I'm afraid we have sewage on street causing a stink. Mounds of human waste were seen by shoppers flowing down Winchester High Street as heavy rainfall swamped several drains. Drains had been overwhelmed by Monday night's heavy rainfall, leaving human excrement and tampons across the cobbles. Disgusted shoppers walked carefully around the waste, while some had left it too late before realising they had stepped in human waste. Winchester resident Julian White, 65, had been walking along the high street since 7 a.m. He said, "It's absolutely disgusting. There is poo everywhere and it stinks." Mandy Smith, store manager of Jigsaw, said, "There is sewage and toilet tissue all down the side of the shop. Downstairs in our stockroom, we have problems with drains and we can smell it. It's putting customers off coming in." Local people say it is the third time it has happened in a year. Southern Water issued an apology on Tuesday and said it would be looking into why the issue has become a chronic problem. A spokesman said, "We'd like to apologise to residents and local businesses. We know how distressing and unpleasant sewer flooding is. A team is attending to clean this up as a priority, and we will be using a heavy jet to clear nearby sewers. We will investigate the root cause of these unpleasant incidents." A Winchester City Council spokesperson said, "Officers this morning, Tuesday, raised an urgent request to Southern Water to attend the site to assess the situation and action any subsequent street cleaning needed. Our understanding is that officers from Southern Water are now on site. This is the second time in around 6 months that the drains have failed in the city centre. The previous occasion was in December last year. And that is accompanied, I'm afraid, by a photo of the local man, Julian White, looking at a heap of raw sewage on top of a drain in the high street, which I will not describe, but it is not pleasant.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we're going to continue with Death Notices, St. Christian Comment, followed by Letters to the Editor, Belgarum Diary, First Person, and then Editorial Comment. And we'll end with Items of General News. I'll start with the Death Notices. Bourne, Eileen Dorothy Bourne, peacefully aged 81. Clitheroe, Margaret Clitheroe, peacefully aged 92. Davidge, Peter Frederick William Davidge. Dunn, Barbara Dunn, in Winchester Hospice after a short illness. Fielding, Betty Fielding, MBE, peacefully. Lewin, Russell Lewin, peacefully aged 51. Marsh, Peter Ernest Marsh, peacefully aged 97. Maxwell, David Gordon Alexander Maxwell of Ardwell, peacefully aged 81. Merritt, Phyllis May Merritt, aged 97. Moss, Nancy Margaret Moss, peacefully at Flowerdown. Rucastle, Dr. David Grant Rucastle, peacefully in Lymington Hospital, aged 86. Rowe, Dorothy Emily Rowe, peacefully at Midway Care Home, aged 102. Snook, Jessie Snook, peacefully aged 97. Thorne, Shirley Elizabeth Thorne, MBE, aged 74 and peacefully. White, Brian John White, peacefully at home. And Wood, Shirley Diane Wood, St. Catherine's View Care Home, aged 92. And now it's time for Christian Comment, read by Heather.
A Kindling the Fire of Love. On July the 16th, 1862, a baby girl was born in Holly Springs, Mississippi, to proud parents James and Lizzie Wells. Her name was Ida, their first child. Ida was a slave, as were her parents, owned by a local architect, Spires Bowling. But Ida Wells was not a slave for very long. That December 31st in 1862 was Watch Night. The slaves kept vigil until Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation freed Ida and 3.5 million other African-American slaves. Ida was able to attend school, to go to college, and worked as a teacher. On May the 1st, 1884, when Ida was 21, she was travelling by train to Nashville, Tennessee. A guard ordered her to give up her seat in the first-class lady's carriage. "You move to the smoking car," he said. Now, Ida had bought a ticket for the first-class carriage, and the smoking carriage was already crowded with other passengers, so she refused what seemed to her an obviously unfair request. But the white male conductor was so stunned and angered that a black woman had refused his instruction that, helped by two other men, he physically dragged her out of the carriage. Wells wrote a famous article for a newspaper based in a local black church about her treatment. She also sued the railway in the district court, and she won. Ida then embarked on a new career as an investigative journalist for another church-based paper. She exposed racist violence, including appalling lynchings of innocent black men. In return for that, the offices of the paper were ransacked. But in defiance, Ida published longer pieces and pamphlets uncovering the painful reality of what was happening, truthfully and factually. She became one of the leaders of the anti-lynching movement, a rare woman in that group, and went on to become one of the founders of the National Civil Rights Movement. The gift of the Holy Spirit, which we see in Ida Wells and other black civil rights leaders, has been interpreted by the American theologian Cornel West as black prophetic fire in his book of that title. We speak in the church of prophetic fire because fire is so prominent in biblical language about prophecy. It's especially true of the prophet Elijah, who speaks and lives with a fiery intensity, the same kind of intensity we see in the life of Ida Wells. And while fire in Scripture is a sign of prophetic action, it is, more broadly, a sign of the presence of God, who comes to animate his church and his people to make us a living temple to his glory. The clocks have changed, the nights draw in, we feel the urge to light a bonfire or a fire in the hearth. Physical fire draws us to its light and heat. A spiritual fire also draws people to its truthfulness and love. So while you gather round physical firesides over the coming weeks, pray also that each Christian may have the gift of spiritual fire, a holy fire of prayer and worship, of compassion and attentive care, of sharing the good news and teaching the faith and ways of Christ. Come, Holy Spirit, fill the hearts of your people and kindle in us the fire of your love. By the Reverend Philip Crinks.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. 10 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, Simon Lever writes about ancient trees. Although Monterre has stated its proposal to build houses on 12.5 hectare of land near Oliver's Battery, it would involve the destruction of ancient trees, downland and chalk hedges, Chronicle October 27. Although the developer may be acting in good faith, preparing land not for development, once ancient trees are destroyed, they can never be replaced. Further, downland is crucial to the local environment. A butterfly reserve is also precious. Although housing is doubtless required, our heritage of a natural-formed environment cannot be replaced. We are fortunate in living in such a pristine area and must do everything to preserve its heritage. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And here Don West writes, Oxbridge Elite. I read with disappointment your article of the Chronicle, October the 20th, focusing on the number of Peter Simmons students who have been offered places at Oxford and Cambridge. This fixation with Oxbridge does our country no good at all. All of the last five Conservative Prime Ministers are Oxford graduates. And look at the total mess they have made of our economy, constitution and reputation in the world. Admission to Oxford is hardly anything to boast about based on this appalling track record of their highest profile graduates. There are plenty of truly excellent universities such as UCL, Bristol and Edinburgh. Perhaps your paper should pay more attention to them for a change and highlight the success of Hampshire students in obtaining admission to these seats of learning. And that is from Don West of Woodfield Drive, Winchester.
Road and Reason, writes Roger Stevens. The Andover Road saga rumbles on. Am I alone in thinking that certain parties diverted a main road to pass through a new housing estate just to show that they could impose a decision that was obviously crackers and that nobody could do a thing about it? It amuses these people to watch us wasting our time as we impotently flail about with arguments of reason, logic and common sense. Surely we have been governed by Muppets, both nationally and locally, for long enough to realise that reason, logic and common sense have no place in the decision-making process in this country. The Andover Road is set to be diverted through Kingsbarton, and there is nothing you or I or any of us can do about it. If that decision does get changed, we can be certain that reason, logic and common sense will have played no part in the process, writes Roger Stevens of Cliffway, Compton.
And John Holder celebrates making history. Rishi Sunak, time to make history. Let's hope our new Prime Minister, graduate of Winchester College, can successfully tackle the many huge challenges we all now face. If so, Winchester will return to its rightful place in the history books. A long while back, in Plant a Tree for 73 year, while visiting a school in the city to talk about tree planting, I saw in one of the classrooms the tourist office's poster, a fine view of the cathedral, and above it in large letters, Winchester, where history was made. To this, the children had added their own words, so the poster then read, Winchester, where history was made, and will be. It's been too long a wait. Those children will now be nearly 60 years old, and the trees they planted, huge. John Holder, Colebrook Place, Winchester.
And Kate McIntosh writes, all too local. While it is understandable that local Conservatives and Winchester College are thrilled by Rishi Sunak's internal coronation by MPs, perhaps they should reflect that he is all too local in outlook. It does little to strengthen confidence in our PM's long-term thinking and sound judgment that amongst his earliest decision was to demote our internationally well-regarded president of the COP26, Alok Sharma, by removing him from the cabinet while retaining Suella Braverman, dubbed Leaky Sue, and Theresa Coffey, dubbed When Min for Health, a threat to national health. Now at Environment, she apparently thinks she can deal with pollution through reusable cups. His refusal to attend COP27 has drawn criticism from world leaders, while allowing himself to be upstaged by his former boss, Johnson, who has given his commitment to attend the gathering at Sharm el-Sheikh. As a country, we continue to cut a sorry figure on the world stage. And that was from Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace, West Hill, Winchester.
And John Harding, CBE, also writes about politics. Bad start. Steve Bryan MP, in his letter to constituents in the Chronicle of October the 27th, praises his new leader, Rishi Sunak. The new PM could not possibly do any worse than his two predecessors, one of whom trashed the economy and made all of us poorer than before, as well as the laughingstock of our allies. However, one of the tests of leadership is making the big calls correctly. And in this aspect, Sunak already shows signs of poor judgment. He will not go to Egypt for the climate conference, even though we face the most severe crisis of our times. That's out of date now, however, but this letter was written before Sunak changed his mind. He has even excluded the new climate change minister from cabinet meetings. Second, he recalled Suella Braverman to the Home Office, despite her breaking the ministerial code and dispatching confidential information to a far-right colleague of hers, John Hayes, who is a notorious anti-immigrant like herself. Civil servants would have been sacked for such behaviour. He has even given Gavin Williamson a ministerial post, who in most opinions was the most disastrous Secretary of State for Education in living memory. And finally, lacking any mandate in the country for his programmes, he will not go for an election, since all the polls indicate that large numbers of Tory seats would disappear. No wonder then that Steve Bryan supports his new leader in a desperate bid to save his seat. John Harding, CBE, St John's Street, Winchester.
And here's more on Rishi Sunak. It's so much for sticking to manifesto, says Brian Ridsdale. I'm cross about the misleading claims about the government sticking to their own manifesto. In the past week, Steve Bryan, Chronicle, and PM Rishi Sunak, Chronicle, have made it clear that delivering on the Conservative Party's manifesto is the right thing to do. Why has this been so thoroughly ignored in the case of the manifesto promise to retain the UK's international aid budget? We have seen brutal cuts that are affecting millions of people in the world's poorest countries. To choose just one example, the government's own equalities assessment said that an 85% cut to UNFPA will mean 250,000 more maternal and child deaths, 14.6 million unintended pregnancies and 4.3 million unsafe abortions. Cuts to girls' education programmes are estimated to result in 700,000 fewer girls receiving an education, including 360,000 girls in Bangladesh. That's from Brian Ridsdale, Hocombe Road, Chandler's Ford.
And Karen McCleary writes, closed again? The good people of Kingsworthy are well used to having their transport plans disrupted due to years of house building, floods, utility upgrades and road repairs. When I saw a sign put up last week notifying us of yet another road closure, this time in Springvale Road for a week, I assumed there were going to be repairs to the adjacent old railway bridge. I walked my dog up the road as usual this morning, Monday, hoping to be able to squeeze past to get up onto the country footpath, but the road was well and truly barricaded off. Imagine my disbelief when the workers told me that the road closure was due not to major works to improve facilities and access or bridge repairs, but simply to dig a drain and sewer for one newly built house wedged in between an old bungalow and the railway bridge. Imagine that, folks. The whole village of Kingsworthy, over 4,000 people, inconvenienced by having their main artery road shut for 1 week for the sake of one solitary new build. Who, I wonder, within the gilded halls of our wondrous council offices, thought that this was a good idea and gave consent for a road closure notice lasting for 1 week, inconveniencing everyone and serving no one except the owners of one new house? Why was the road closed on Saturday, with work not starting until Monday? And why is there no access for pedestrians and cyclists? Why has it been closed at all? Couldn't a traffic light system have been installed, at least to keep some traffic moving? Was there any consultation with local people or the parish council before closing the road? Oh, what an excellent example of a bureaucratic council's total disregard for the ordinary people trying to get on with their lives. And that was from Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
Paul Burrows Gibson's letter is headed Fireworks Fears. Many former servicemen and women with mental health problems, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, experience distress at this time of year, with the sudden flashes and bangs of fireworks reminding them of the horrors of war. Veteran Bereavement Support UK works with not just the bereaved, but also those who are affected by the living bereavement of the scars of war and conflict and those with PTSD. We spend a lot of time with veterans who have mental scars from their time in the forces. In the past week, a lot of them have been suffering because of the fireworks, and this will continue unless people start thinking of others. Can we please just ask, if you decide to have fireworks at home, think of your neighbours in your road. Just ask around, put the word out in your street that you will be having them, and what day and time, so they can prepare themselves and possibly go out somewhere quiet for the evening. It might not upset them, but it could send them into a spiral. And I would hate for you to find out that your fireworks caused them a time in hospital, or worse. So just think who lives near you. Paul Burrows Gibson, Veterans Bereavement Support UK, Fair Oak, Eastleigh.
And Linda Bannister mourns a shop closure. I cannot be the only person who is deeply sad and concerned that Closs and Hamblin are leaving their current high street premises and reducing their range of goods. C&H is my favourite Winchester shop. I rarely visit without making a purchase. Online shopping is no substitute for the real thing, especially when it comes to crafts where colour matching is often crucial. As far as I'm aware, there is nowhere else within reasonable distance where these goods can be bought. I always buy Christmas decorations, presents and other gifts here as well, and the cafe is my go-to for coffee and light lunches. Staff are consistently friendly and helpful throughout the store. I thought the City Council cared about the High Street offer. At this rate, there'll be so little to bother coming in for, especially if M&S bow out as well. It does not bode well for the Silver Hill project if a shop like C&H can't cope with the overheads in the High Street. Mm. Linda Bannister, Pine Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you very much for all of your contributions. Now it's time for an alternative look at the news, because Jane is going to read Belgarum Diary.
And there are two articles in Belgarum this week. The first is Ringing the Changes on the High Street. Winchester City Centre has seen a number of changes in recent weeks, with openings, closures and property being marketed. Here is a roundup of what has been happening. Tilius has moved into the shop that was formerly Barnett and Tootie in the High Street. The upmarket gift shop has relocated from Tavistock in Teviot. Yaya's revamp of the former Tom's Deli in the Casson Block in St George's Street, of which there is a picture, is nearing completion. When opened, it will be the city's first Greek restaurant. Giggling Squid in the Square, previously the Slug and Lettuce, is due to belatedly open in November. Jewels in the High Street has closed, although the Chamber of Commerce has reported that it is looking for a larger space in the city centre. The unit has been taken over by Hampton's estate agent, which is moving down the High Street. Debenhams is being let with three restaurants, cafes proposed. The High Street store, empty since 2021 and owned by Surrey County Council, is now being marketed to the hospitality sector, with hotel rooms at the back off Market Lane. The Square in the Square is being rebranded as Honey and Harvey. Coffee Lab in Little Minster Street has been rebranded as Academy. Former Regis Hairdressers in Colebrook Street is being taken on by Aztop. As reported in the Chronicle, Closs & Hamlin, or C&H Fabrics as we knew it, will be closing soon, but is looking for a smaller unit in the city centre. Bento Factory and Oriental Tailor have swapped units in St Thomas's Street. Aspiga has opened in the former Age Concern shop in the High Street near the Man on Horse statue. And Turquoise, the former Lochvine restaurant on Jury Street, will be opening soon. And the second article is a particularly interesting one. Intriguing insight into murky world of music. Chris T.T. now lives in Brighton, but was brought up in Winchester, attending Henry Beaufort School and Peter Simmons College. For 20 years, he pursued a career as a musician and songwriter, before abruptly calling time on it and switching to a successful career in podcast production. Buried in the English Earth, to be published next month, is his fascinating memoir of two decades in the music industry. Featuring the likes of Tom Robinson, Jim Bob and Frank Turner, it's a gripping read and a fitting tribute to a principled, hugely inventive and characterful artist. It's frank, revealing and very funny. And this is accompanied by a delightful photo of Chris T.T. with his book Buried in the English Earth. And I thought it was worth mentioning that actually the parents of Chris T.T., that is... Heather and
Noel.
Heather and Noel, I was remembering your Thorpe Tracy TT, are reading with us today. So this is a delightful tribute to their son.
Thank you.
This week's first person is by Joanna Lewis, and Heather is going to read it.
Don't forget Dogs of War. The dogs of war, the hounds of hell. I've always found these popular phrases that are often used to describe the some particularly psychotic bunch of mercenaries, warlords, or Putin's latest commando force to be really, really unfair on our four-legged friends, especially in relation to their forgotten role in conflict. It's Remembrance Week, so a lot of us will be wearing red poppies with pride to help support the servicemen and women and as mark of respect to those who make the ultimate sacrifice for their country. But some of us will also be wearing a purple poppy. It's become a symbol of remembrance for animals lost in service. I always find the stories of the horses who lived and died in the mud and craters of the First World War extremely moving and tragic. Likewise, the dogs who lived and died in Afghanistan, trained to sniff out unexploded anti-personnel mines. The bond between a soldier with an animal in combat or a police dog and its handler is so close. When broken, it can be unbearable for both. And then there's the sheer innocence of the animals caught up in some man-made horror. I am in awe of trained service animals. I just about managed to train my dachshund to sit nicely for a treat without biting off anyone's fingers. My childhood memory of a St. Bernard in action was not one bounding through the snow to administer brandy. It's of one who lived next door and ran up behind Uncle Ivan and bit him on the bottom. And the pigeons. These were once trained to carry messages in wartime across the English Channel. Unbelievable. Many stories have come out of Ukraine this year about the crucial role of dogs in the conflict. In May 2022, a tiny Jack Russell Cross called Patron received a medal from President Zelensky for locating more than 200 explosives scattered amongst the civilian population by retreating Russian soldiers. He was only 2 years old. Or Tay, the three-year-old German shepherd, was sent into former occupied city to find UDIs. Despite all our technological advances, animals painstakingly trained by experts continue to play their part in saving lives. Murphy's Army are the only legitimate animal remembrance organisation in the UK. They also... hashtag they also served. Money raised from the sale of their purple poppies, wristbands, tote bags and car stickers goes to charities such as the National Foundation for Retired Service Animals or the Thin Blue Paw Foundation. You might have noticed more dogs around wearing purple coats with writing on, and these signal trained dogs helping people manage chronic stress, trauma and anxiety. This year's Remembrance Sunday may be an especially difficult moment of reflection, but for that reason a more necessary one. We will feel again the death of the Queen by her absence. As always, we will want to acknowledge the sorrows of bereaved families and the sacrifice in conflict. This year, Ukraine will be on our minds too, and the current bombardment. But we can also celebrate the bravery of civilians and soldiers under fire. As my friend Sally said, who is homing a family locally, these are good people. And we feel the distant, unreal threat of nuclear war as never before. It's a topic that is beyond awful. We feel so powerless. Putin's scaremongering is part of his war game, so sensibly we don't take it too seriously. We leave it to writers like Cormac McCarthy. In his latest novel, he imagines an ash-covered world, with the essence of life destroyed by a terrible new god, hand-forged, nature replaced by uninhabitable rubble. But unsurprisingly, nuclear anxiety is growing, especially amongst the young, so we must not forget that people need extra reassuring. Let us pray that Putin gets put out to pasture, or someone buys him a couple of St. Bernards for Christmas. Do not get fooled by others selling similar items.
Now we've got editorial comment, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, it says the headline is "Raw Sewage on Our City's Streets." There was a phrase often used a few years ago about private affluence and public squalor. Are we seeing some such with the latest bursting of the public drains under Winchester High Street? The heavy rainfall overnight on Monday and Tuesday caused the pipes to be overwhelmed and sewage and other waste spilling onto the streets. This happened in June and at the end of 2021. Is there anything more squalid than raw sewage flowing down the high street? Winchester is one of the wealthiest places in the country, and yet a short spell of heavy rain is enough to get the better of the drainage system. This is all a bit of a mystery. Why is it happening so often? People talk about climate change and heavier rainfall, but this country has always had outbreaks of heavy rain, and yet the high street drains coped. The drains failed not because of a spell of prolonged rain, but of one traditional English autumn day of showers. Whatever the cause, the authorities, Southern Water at the city and county councils need to sort it out, and quickly.
Lighting up time ends on Friday the 4th of November at 7:02 a.m. and begins at 4:35 p.m. And on Wednesday the 9th of November it ends at 7:11 a.m. and begins at 4:27 p.m. Now we'll go on to items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And here we have Artist City Centre Mural Unveiled. The winner of a competition to breathe new life into a once dreary historic passageway has been hard at work this week implementing her design. Earlier this year, Civic Chiefs announced plans to commission an experienced artist to deliver a vibrant bespoke mural at St Morris's Covert. An open call for designs saw over 30 submissions, and after a public vote, internationally renowned artist Molly Hawkins was chosen to fill the huge blank wall with her colourful creation. Over the past few days, part of the covert has been blocked off by fencing, while the artist has been busy executing her vision, ready for tomorrow's grand unveiling. The artist previously said, "My joyful design hold aspect of local heritage while celebrating contemporary design. Using the colours of Winchester City Council, the colour palette is curated to ignite inspiration and enhance the surrounding environment." And I have to say there is a large photo of the artist with some local people, including Martin Todd. And it's a very attractive, subtle colours, not too bright, but colourful, with little indications of the round table, the cathedral, all sorts of items which we consider to be Winchester. And I look forward to seeing it in St Morris's Covert.
And the second item of general news is going to be read by Heather.
Night of 70s Nostalgia. The Theatre Royal is set to welcome the band The Zoots for an evening of 70s nostalgia in November, on the November the 6th, to be precise. The five-piece band, fronted by Wiltshire-born guitarist Jamie Goddard, has performed in more than 35 countries and at many venues, including the London Palladium and Old Trafford. Jamie said, "The 70s show takes the audience on a journey through the decade with some of the biggest hits of the decade from artists such as Elton John, Dolly Parton, Neil Diamond, T-Rex, Mind, Mudd, David Bowie and ABBA. We've tried to keep it fun and include as many songs as we can, mixing the vast genres and fashions in a smooth, slick show." Earlier this year, the Corporate Live Wire Innovation and Excellence Awards presented the group with the 2022 Band of the Year Award. In 2018, the group had received the UK Best Pop Music Cover Band Award at the Global Entertainment Awards. So this show, The Sounds of the 70s, takes place at the Theatre Royal, Winchester, at 7:30 on November the 6th, and there's more information available on the Theatre Royal website.
College greets royal guest. An ill-timed burst of rainfall failed to dampen the excitement of staff, students and even lemurs at a college near Winchester as the Princess Royal unveiled new multi-million pound facilities. Sparshot College was delighted to welcome Princess Anne and guests to its Sparshot campus on Tuesday to officially open the Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre. escorted by a college group, escorted by college group principal and CEO Julie Milburn, she toured new housing for companion animals and enclosures for zoo animals, as well as the refurbished Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons accredited Veterinary Nursing Training Centre. Along the route, she had the opportunity to meet a number of students and staff. The tour concluded with the unveiling of a commemorative plaque for the Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre. Princess Anne last visited the college in October 1989 to formally open student accommodation and a management training centre. The latter is now known as the Hampshire Rural Business Centre and is still in use as a conference and training centre today. She joked, "You might be surprised to hear this place has changed beyond recognition since I was last here, and it's amazing to hear you're still adding to it. I hope this includes hot showers."
And here we have plea for hosts as refugees now face homelessness. Civic chiefs have issued an urgent appeal for new hosts in Winchester as Ukrainian families are facing homelessness. The city has welcomed nearly 200 families since the war in Ukraine started. However, many of the initial six-month host agreements are now coming to an end, leaving those unable to find private or council accommodation in a perilous position. The City Council is in the process of rematching guests with other families, but it now says it needs more people to step forward to meet demand. Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "Almost 200 Ukrainian families have now settled into our district through the Homes from Ukraine scheme after fleeing the violence inflicted on their country by Putin's invasion. These families are enriching our communities and many are beginning to build successful and independent lives in the district. A number have moved from their host families into private rental accommodation, having secured employment, for example. However, some hosts, be it due to the cost of living or other pressures, are finding it difficult to continue supporting their guest families. Winchester City Council is calling for more households to step forward as hosts for families to be rematched with. To help with rising financial pressures, the Hampshire County Council recently announced a £200 monthly top-up payment, meaning rematching hosts will receive £550 per month for the next 6 months under the Homes for Ukraine scheme. Councillor Tippett Cooper said, "In addition, Winchester City Council has a team of dedicated housing staff to assist hosts with every aspect of the hosting arrangement. There is also support from the hosting community with well-established social media groups providing daily practical advice on all sorts of issues. Finally, fantastic local groups like the Winchester City of Sanctuary, the CAB, the Churches Together and the SWVG are providing all sorts of vital community-based help, including social meetups, language support and practical advice."
Developer is back in court for felling trees. A Hampshire landowner fined £50,000 for illegally felling scores of trees has now been prosecuted for a similar offence on another piece of land. Property developer James Barney destroyed an area of woodland just weeks before submitting a planning application to build holiday lets on the site at Durley Road, at Durley Brook Road, Durley. Barnes, aged 35, of High Street, Old Burselden, was sentenced at Southampton Magistrates Court after pleading guilty to felling timber without a licence. It comes just weeks after he was prosecuted at the same court for a separate offence committed at Horton Heath in April last year. Last month, Barney was told to pay £65,000 in fines and costs after tearing down 53 protected oak trees at Scorries Copse, also to make way for proposed holiday lets. As reported, the trees were destroyed despite the protests of councillors and residents. Barney was fined £50,000 after pleading guilty to breaching tree preservation regulations. He was also told to pay the £17,841 legal costs incurred by Eastleigh Borough Council. The Durley offence was committed in March 2020 and involved land Barney had bought for £27,500. He destroyed between 10 and 20 trees, sparking an investigation by Forestry England and the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, the court heard. Alastair Haggerty, prosecuting, said the trees were chopped down just weeks before Barney submitted an application to build holiday lets on the site. Mr Haggerty said holiday let scheme was rejected by Winchester City Council and a second attempt to gain consent was also turned down. John Fitzsimmons, mitigating, said Barney did not benefit financially because his applications to build holiday lets were refused. But District Judge Peter Greenfield said the work was carried out clearly for profit.
Bill for social flats hits £2 million. Civic chiefs have decided to press ahead with a scheme for social housing in Mittledeva, despite a significant increase to costs. The cost of building six new flats and additional parking at Southbrook Cottages has soared from about £1.2 million to just shy of £2 million due to inflation and the rocketing costs of construction. This is the second time in a matter of weeks the City Council has had to rescue a major development. In October, an additional £1 million was pumped into the new pavilion at King George V playing fields in Highcliffe. Speaking at the Cabinet Committee for Housing on Monday, October the 31st, Project Manager Deborah Sunderley said, following an open tender procurement process for all of the building works, including the additional parking, all tenders submitted were higher than the latest cost estimate and the original scheme budget that was approved. The significant increase in the cost of the scheme is due to the unprecedented increase in building materials, labour shortages and contractor pricing factoring in the risk of further inflationary increase. She added, this also means that the scheme does not now pass the council's viability criteria. However, the paper sets out reasons to progress with this scheme, chief of which is because it is an exemplary pilot project which would be built to the highest energy-saving standards to give maximum benefit for tenants, as well as meeting the net zero challenge. The flats, which comprise four one-bedroom properties and two two-bedroom properties, will be built to Passive House Plus standards, meaning they will use 90% less energy than regular homes. Housing bosses not only will this save tenants a significant amount of money on their bills, but it will also meet the need for such homes in upmarket villages such as Mitchelteva, while helping achieve the council's carbon neutrality goal. Green Party councillor for Central Meon Valley, Malcolm Wallace, described the development at Southbrook Cottages as a step in the right direction. He said, overall, the project appears to be achieving the purpose set out by the council, and therefore, despite the cost increase, I support the project proceeding. However, the Green councillor added, in order for us to get the most value out of this exercise, we need to understand how much of the costing increase is to do with economic conditions and how much to do with the construction process, as this would guide the council in future developments. The additional spend was agreed and the contract was awarded to Asia Construction Limited.
And here we have Halloween's creepy crew aren't as lethal as they look. It's the spookiest time of the year and some wildlife is closely associated with this fearsome season. This week, we look at some of the species linked with Halloween and whether this frightful reputation is deserved. Firstly, going batty. We've probably all read stories about vampire bats that want to suck your blood, but how realistic is this myth? Not particularly, as it turns out. There are three species of bat which feed on blood, But it is cows and horses, not humans, that are the main source of these little mammals. All the species of vampire bats live in Central and South America. Another reason not to let vampires put you off finding out more. The lines of hedgerows or trees make corridors for bats to feed, and you might see them swooping in the twilight as they start to hunt for their insect prey. Our most common bat is the common pipistrelle, which needs to eat around 3,000 insects every night. Bat detectors are a relatively cheap and simple piece of kit that can help you find out just which species you have locally. Secondly, the silence of the lambs. The death's head hawk moth, which might look the part with a dark skull shape down its abdomen. But these moths are completely harmless. They are one of the larger moths we might see in Britain, but they are not a breeding species. Sightings are becoming more frequent, and late summer through to autumn is the time they are most often seen. Their caterpillars eat plants in the nightshade family, and they find potato leaves especially tasty. Their fondness for the vegetable means most sightings come from gardens and allotments. Far from being frightening, these moths will squeak when they are alarmed or feel threatened. And finally, bad omens. Crows and ravens are said by some to be bad omens, but these birds are some of the cleverest species in the animal kingdom. The unfortunate combination of black plumage, a diet of carrion, and their carrying croaky calls have led to their association with death. But both crows and ravens are brilliant puzzle solvers and are quite capable of using tools to help them to get food or treats. However, research has shown that crows and other corvids can recognise and remember faces, so probably best not to give the birds a reason to hold a grudge.
Celebrating college history. A book launch celebrating the long history of Sparshot College has reunited current and retired staff after many years apart. The book, A Place of Transformation by Dr. John Lander, records the college's transition from small farm school to further education college. Details of the college's transformation show that it went through some difficult periods, but was saved each time by the recognition of the importance of its work. The school opened in 1899 and trained students for the agricultural industry. In 1970, Principal Len Norman began an expansion in student numbers and unique agricultural training. The college merged with Andover College in 2007 to form the Sparshot College Group. The author was praised by Dr. Norman, who commended the far-reaching research which had gone into the book. One retired staff member, Dave Alderson, said, "Oh, many of us have an ingrained part of Sparshot running through our veins like letters in a stick of rock."
Orchard to recall lives of Austin sisters. To mark the upcoming 250th anniversary of Cassandra Austin, Jane's older sister, the Jane Austen House Museum is planting a commemorative orchard in the museum's courtyard. Homebuilder Carla Holmes is supporting them in its efforts to reimagine the lost orchards that once stood in the grounds of the house and mark the remarkable milestone. The museum is raising funds to celebrate Cassandra's life and role in the creation of her sister's novels to open a small orchard. The museum, which is internationally renowned and based in Chawton near Alton, will open the orchard on Cassandra's 250th birthday on Monday, January the 9th. Lizzie Dunford, director of Jane Austen's house, said Cassandra's orchard will be a living celebration of the woman behind the woman and will liven and enrich a special place to allow our visitors to celebrate Cassandra's life and contribution, as well as providing homes and food for our resident population of birds, insects and bats. Cassandra lived at Jane Austen's house from 1809 until her death in 1845. Jane's letters to her are filled with references to plants, flowers and fruits from the orchard, now sadly lost from the grounds of the house. Lizzie said, "We will recreate this lost orchard using dwarf varieties suitable for growing in containers. There'll be a tree for every novel, and donors' names will be recorded on plaques for each tree. The orchard will provide blossom in the spring, delicious shade in the summer, and fruits in the autumn. We will underplant the trees with plants for pollinators, turning this empty space into a haven for people and wildlife alike. Thanks to the donation from Carla Holmes, we already have two trees organised and are asking Jane Austen readers across Alton and further afield to play their parts in the orchard and donate to the cause."
And now Boss stole £91,000 of cancer cash. A trusted finance boss holidayed abroad and went on shopping sprees after siphoning more than £90,000 from a cancer charity. Paula Trebeck has now been jailed after she took £91,344 from Wessex Cancer Trust over a period of almost 7 years. The 48-year-old joined the charity in 1993. She was working as a financial coordinator when the fraud began. Prosecuting Matthew Lawson said the charity had more than doubled in size, meaning there was less supervision of staff, with Trebeck taking advantage of this. Trebeck went undetected when she transferred money into her bank from charity accounts she had been asked to close. She changed papers to make it look like the money was being used to pay suppliers. She carried on for nearly 7 years until late 2019, taking £93,813 from the accounts. She only paid back £2,386. Mr. Lawson said she was spending large amounts of money on shopping and holidays, living beyond her means. This came at a time of financial difficulties for the charity, which was seeing services scaled back as a result, the court heard. Jailing her for 2 years, Judge Nicholas Rowland said, "You were a lifelong employee of the Wessex Cancer Trust. It expanded and that allowed you to take advantage. You were surprised it was that much, but you must have had some idea of what you were doing. While others were giving up hard-earned sums, there is no excuse for that. People may think twice about giving to this charity, all because of what you did." Trebeck's betrayal was discovered when suppliers began chasing the charity, saying that they hadn't been paid. Trebeck of Broadlands Road, Southampton, was questioned but gave evasive answers until the charity took action by breaking into her work desk, where they found fobs to access the bank accounts and documents to close the accounts, which had never been submitted. She was arrested and made full admissions to police about her actions, appearing visibly shocked when told how much had been taken from the accounts. Mitigating, Chris Gager said Trebeck has been trying to make her family a better unit by taking them on holiday and treating them. He added that she is deeply remorseful and deeply regrets her actions. She is aware of the impact it has had on the company she worked for many years. She is ashamed for herself and her family. Trebeck admitted fraud by abuse of position. And there is a sad photo of Paula Trebeck holding out a large bucket to collect money for the Wessex Cancer Trust.
Now there's a much nicer story. It's headlined Big-Hearted Handyman. A Winchester handyman is helping the community cut the costs for odd jobs that need doing. Simon Gaffney, owner of Innate Spaces Limited, which makes little shepherd's huts, hand-built, hand-constructed shepherd's huts for people, is offering to help people amid the cost-of-living crisis. The carpenter from Winnell posted on a social media site that he will be providing a day of free labour at the beginning of every month. The multi-traded business owner has encouraged anyone in need of minor work but who doesn't have the funds to get in contact. Simon, aged 38, said, "Well, I decided to offer my services one day a month for free, as I'm aware that the cost of living is crippling and people who may need work doing urgently couldn't afford to have it rectified. I am working my way through a lot of requests. Most seem to be from people who have issues with doors and windows, which are letting cold air in and forcing them to generate more heat to keep warm. I am booked in to reseal doors and windows, and even replace some kitchen taps which have not worked for some time. They are only small tasks, but if they make someone's life a little easier, that's what it's all about.
A special moment to see rare species return. Hundreds of endangered crayfish have been released at a secret site in the River Itchen. In a bid to boost the crustacean numbers in the UK, conservationists have released 200 white-clawed crayfish into the Hampshire River. They are one of the UK's most endangered native species, and the release is hoped to secure the species' future. They were released in time for breeding season and have been reared from eggs. The release was organised by experts from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust and Bristol Zoological Society. Despite once being common and widespread in British rivers and streams, white-clawed crayfish numbers have declined dramatically by at least 70% across the UK since the 1970s. This decline has been even more severe in Hampshire. They are currently threatened with extinction due to pollution, habitat loss, and most prominently, the spread of invasive crayfish species such as North American signal crayfish, which carry crayfish plague, a disease that is deadly to our native species. Dr. Ben Rushbrook, the Trust's principal ecologist who leads on the white-clawed crayfish conservation project, said, "This and earlier releases have allowed us to extend the range of white-clawed crayfish on this catchment of the River Itchen. This will increase the species' long-term security by providing it a degree of resilience to the impacts of potential threats, such as pollution." Working with the Bristol Zoological Society to rear and breed crayfish of Itchen provenance in captivity allows us to achieve this without impacting the population in the species' existing range. The presence of white-clawed crayfish indicates a healthy ecosystem, as the freshwater invertebrates require clean, well-oxygenated and nutrient-rich waters. As well as Bristol Zoological Society partners on the project include the National England and the Environment Agency. Dr. Jen Nightingale, UK Conservation Manager at Bristol Zoological Society, said, "We have worked so hard to successfully breed this endangered species, so seeing them return to their natural habitat is always a special moment for us. White-clawed crayfish are an important part of the aquatic ecosystem and of the food chain, but numbers are in decline, and without projects like this, the species could disappear from southwest England in the next 10 years. And there's two lovely pictures of the young scientists with big plastic buckets around the river, carrying the buckets to the river and from the river. But there's not a picture of actual crayfish."
And it's all hands to the pump for Vineyard's bumper harvest. Nearly 30 tonnes of grapes were harvested by hand at a Hampshire vineyard after the hot summer encouraged a fruitful harvest. October means harvest time for vineyards in the county. The county's chalk-based soil provides minerals, creating acidity and ripeness in the growing grapes, making it an increasingly popular location for the growing of sparkling wine. From October the 10th to the 13th, Rheims English Sparkling Team was joined by 17 volunteers to harvest 28.5 tonnes of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier by hand from two fields near New Cheriton. Rheims, based at Grange Farm in Tichborne, reported an outstanding harvest with exceptional quality fruit due to the hot summer. The harvested grapes went straight to the winery at Hattingley near Alsford to be pressed after picking and go into tanks for initial fermentation. In February, the blending process will begin with the mixture quantities of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier decided for this year's harvest. After blending, the wine is bottled and ready for the second fermentation. The 2022 vintage will then be corked, labelled and prepped for consumption from late 2025. Brand owner Augusta Rames said, "Harvest time is one of the most satisfying times of the year. Every day was a delight this year, picking lovely big bunches of fruit with our wonderful team and amazing volunteers. Thank you to everyone that joined us. We can't wait to taste the wine." The number of vineyards in Hampshire has been steadily growing in recent years. The soil is the same as in the Champagne region of France, and climate change means that much of Hampshire is increasingly suitable for sparkling wine. And this has a collection of lovely photos. Firstly, the group of volunteers who I'm sure will be delighted to be given a bottle of the wine, and the rows of grapevines with huge buckets and carts of green grapes underneath, which they're picking in the full sun. And if you ever go to anything at the Grange exhibition or opera at the Grange, then you will be given a taste of this delicious wine.
Next door move nearly there for Top Victorian Cafe Bar. A popular city bar is set to open the doors to its new extension after months of planning, owners have confirmed. The Cabinet Rooms in Jury Street recently took over the premises next door, formerly occupied by Computer Solutions, to expand and offer customers a larger space. And there's a picture of the two smiling owners in front of the rather glorious doorway into that building. The cafe and bar will open soon, but owners Gary Whiter and Marcus Rowe are waiting for specially designed fittings to arrive. Gary said, "We're hoping to open mid-November. There have been so many delays due to COVID. Ordering items has been a nightmare. We're now waiting on the new bar. It had to be bespoke because of the structure of the building, but once it's here, we'll be ready." Cabinet Rooms has been crowned top-rated bar in Winchester by TripAdvisor. Gary and his business partner and husband, Marcus, admit to feeling the pressure, with Gary saying it's been a big project and at times stressful, but it is so exciting to see it all expand. "We've tried to be really respectful of the building, and hopefully people who walk past will see it as the grand Victorian building that it is."
Accused of prison plot. Three people charged with conspiring to smuggle steroids and mobile phones into Winchester Prison have appeared in court. Excuse me. The defendants are Christopher Harmon, 36, of Penton's Close, Hollybourne, Liam Currell, 31, of No Fixed Abode, Stephanie Burt, 30, of Stanley Green Road, Poole, Dorset. All three pleaded not guilty to being part of a conspiracy to bring a List A article into prison, namely steroids, between May the 1st and August 31st, 2021. Harmon, who appeared in the dock wearing a black shirt, and Currell, who joined via video link from HMP Guy's Marsh, also denied conspiring to bring a List B article into prison, namely mobile phones, during the same period. Burt, who appeared via video link on medical grounds, pleaded guilty to the charge. She is also accused of failing to comply with a Section 49 Notice of Regulation Investigatory Powers Act after illegally failing to give the police the PIN for her mobile phone, which she denies. During a hearing at Winchester Crown Court, Judge Susan Evans, KC, adjourned the case for a pre-trial review on December the 16th. The trial date of January the 30th, 2023, at Salisbury Crown Court has also been set. Harmon and Burt were granted conditional bail, while Carroll has been remanded in custody.
And this article is rather appropriate, following on from my previous one. Festive fizz and fairy lights for wine lovers. A festive event is returning to Winchester to showcase Hampshire's finest wines. Fairy Lights and Fizz, a popular fixture for wine drinkers in Winchester's Christmas calendar, is back on Friday, December the 9th in Guildhall, Winchester, after a 3-year break. The annual English wine tasting event, hosted by Vineyards of Hampshire, is one of two events a year that allows people to sample Hampshire's quality sparkling and still wines in one place. From 6 p.m. to 10 p.m, visitors can learn about new grapes and blends and find a Hampshire fizz for their Christmas meal. Producers from Black Chalk, Cottonworth, Danebury Vineyards, Exton Park, The Grange, Hambledon, Hattingley and Rames will be joined this year by new members Quab Park and Louis Pommery, England. Danebury Vineyards Head of Sales Caroline Stevens said, "This will be the Vineyards of Hampshire's third year at the historical Guildhall, Winchester. The Grand Bapsey Hall will be festooned in fairy lights, creating a wonderful atmosphere for Friends of the Vineyards, the Vineyards Club subscribers and the English wine drinkers curious to taste the different styles of sparkling wine on offer, talk to the winemakers to find out more about the sparkling wines made on their doorstep and stock up on festive fizz."
Class of 1954, raise a toast to the best days of their lives. A group of old primary school friends raised a toast to their Year 6 teacher, who got them through the 11-plus exams during the 1950s. The former pupils from Western Primary School in Winchester got together at the Winchester Hotel to celebrate 75 years since they joined the school. The group's been meeting up at the hotel for a celebratory lunch once a year since 2012 and even organised weekly chats over Zoom to stay connected throughout the lockdowns. As the 10th anniversary of their reunions, this year's meeting was even more special. Most of the primary school chums have moved away from Winchester, with some people coming from as far as Falmouth for the annual get-together. Former student Ian Miller, aged 80, remains a Wintonian through and through and continues to live in Oliver's Battery. He said, "People say it's quite unusual for a group to be keeping together this long. I don't know whether that's because they're surprised we're still alive, but we think it's lovely to be able to meet each year." During the meal, a toast was raised to Jack Pace, their teacher, from 1953 to 1954, who guided the primary schoolers through the 11-plus examination for relocation to secondary education. Ian continued, "Apart from teaching the three R's, Mr. Pace reminded us how to behave and how to help others. He gave us a sense of history, even at our young ages. He was a good man, and we were privileged to have him as our teacher. He stood up for what he believed in and what was right. It did not always help him in his career, but that was more than made up for by the reputation he earned for honesty, integrity and personality. Our time at school started with Miss Muriel East, then moving on to Mrs. Barbara Lewis, Mrs. Iris O'Grady and Miss Lucy Richards. These classes were held on the ground floor, but we then progressed up the stone stairs when we were around 7 years old of age to classrooms on the first floor where we were taught by Miss Dorothy Sait, Mr. Jack Bartlett and finally Mr. Jack Pace. We're all now either 80 or approaching 80 years of age, so it's somewhat remarkable that we're able to meet up annually still and reminisce fondly about our time at Western School. Western Primary School is now situated in Browning Drive, but the reunion group attended the school from 1947 when it was in Elm Road and followed the motto, "We Serve," and there's a smiling group of people, all clearly not spring chickens, having a lovely meal together to celebrate.
PM's teacher pens memoirs. A former city councillor and teacher of Rishi Sunak has released his memoirs. Gibbon's Years by Jock MacDonald chronicles his life from when he arrived in Winchester in 1964 up to 2021. Jock was brought up in wartime India and post-war Scotland. He read classics at Oxford before teaching in the USA and then at Winchester College. He co-directed a multi-school dig of a now famous Roman cemetery and was central figure in opposing the M3 route through Winchester's water meadows. Jock, of Stockbridge Road Full Flood, said, After 7 years as housemaster of Moberly's in Kingsgate Street, I went into local politics with green aspirations on behalf of the SDP and the Alliance. In 1982, I became the city councillor for Sparsholt. In the 1983 and 1987 general elections, I contested Winchester for the SDP Liberal Alliance. And then in the later election, my team managed to clock up 41% of the votes. After leaving the City Council at the point when the Liberal Democrats took control, I wrote an unpublished novel in the simple little house I had bought in central Italy in 1967. I then spent 4 years as second master in Winchester College. In retirement, I spent much time researching both sides of the climate change debate. I also raised money for Martin Biddle's Winchester Studies and helped Winchester Action on Climate Change to get started. More recently, I chaired that body for 18 months. The book more or less finishes in July 2021 with a discussion about the rather disappointing approach to COP25 led by Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak, who was once a pupil of mine. And there's two pictures. There's a picture of Jock himself, smiling cheerfully, and a picture of the front cover of his books, Gibbon's Years, which shows a church and silhouettes of a family and a bird flying over, I think, a cherry tree. It's very pretty. Mm-hmm. Good book.
And here we have Tesco cancels home deliveries. Scores of shoppers across Hampshire were left baffled after Tesco cancelled all its home deliveries after 1 p.m. on Friday due to a nationwide technical glitch. People awaiting their weekly shop received a last-minute email from the supermarket giant to say it would no longer be arriving. One Winchester customer took to social media to describe her shock after opening the disappointing message, while another said they had booked in for a slot with Sainsbury's instead. Many insisted they hadn't even been told of the cancellations while venting their rage on Twitter. One customer, Anna Cole, said, "Disgraceful, Tesco. All orders cancelled for delivery from 1 p.m. Totally understand system issues can't be helped, but how you deal with it can. Leaving your customers hanging with no communication, no offer to reschedule or any offer to say sorry is shocking." A spokesperson for Tesco said that, "Due to technical issue, we have had to cancel some online orders that were due for delivery." They added, "We're really sorry for any inconvenience caused. Customers who were impacted can use our app or website to rebook at a time convenient to them." Tesco delivers in the region of 1 million online orders every week, meaning thousands of customers could have been affected by the issue on Friday afternoon. Supermarket chiefs said that all affected customers would receive an email to notify them of the delay. Tesco advised people to use its app or website to place a new order and view all available delivery slots.
Anglers hook up with family hit by cancer. A local family raised their biggest ever sum after 10 years of hosting charity fishathons. Anglers took to Willow Park Fishery in Aldershot for Ian and Victoria Palmer's 10th anniversary fishing match for Cancer Research UK. The couple from Stanmore started the event after Ian's sister Debbie died of breast cancer at 44. Mr. Palmer has also survived Hodgkin's lymphoma and was fishing when he found out his sister's second bout of cancer was terminal. The two-day fishing match raised a total of more than £5,300 from the 38 anglers who took part, the raffle and donations from friends and family. It was the most raised by the biennial fishing match, which began in Ampfield in 2012. Organiser Vicky Palmer said, "Unfortunately, we didn't hit our target of £10,000, but we still raised a respectable amount for cancer research, which, given the current cost of living crisis, we're really pleased with. As a family, we've been hit hard by cancer. We've lost siblings, aunts, uncles and grandparents to it, but we've also had siblings, parents, cousins and uncles survive it. And that is what drives us to help Cancer Research UK develop better treatments and find ways to cure this non-discriminate disease. We want to see cancer eradicated. The only way to do that is through research and development of better treatments. Due to low water levels, the competition was challenging. Only 6 out of the 19 pairs caught anything the whole weekend. Winners Andy Leyland from Bankhound Carp Picks and his partner Jeff Bishop caught 4 fish, totalling £82.5. And Jeff also won the trophy for the biggest fish, with his top catch weighing £27.2. Competitors' families came along to show their support, as well as a few members of the public and fishery staff. Anglers and visitors got together and Saturday afternoon for a raffle and auction with prizes donated from shops and fisheries, such as Poing Something Unpronounceable Angling, Sainsbury's Badger Farm, Linear Fisheries, Cooking Farm Fishery, Quarter Tackle, Sam's Custom Hook Baits, Bait Ministry, Fuller's Brook Wolves, Cotswold Wildlife Park and Nash Tackle. Aldershot Fisheries given a provisional go-ahead for the next match in the spring of 2024, and tickets will be advanceable a year in advance.
And pubs relief as delayed roadworks finally complete. Delayed roadworks, which have been frustrating residents for months, have now finished. The work was to link the new solar farm at Three Maids Hill to the main electricity works through Littleton. It had been due to finish at the end of September and was then pushed back to the end of October. However, according to staff at the Running Horse Inn, the work has now finally finished. Max Heathcote, who works at the pub, said, "The road closed sign is still in place, but the road is now clear. We had a few inquiries from people while the work was happening, asking how to access the building, but we haven't seen any decrease in footfall." Running Horse Inn had a major refurbishment in July, including 15 bedroom sites named after top race horses or race courses. Before the work was finished, Councillor Nick Adams-King said, "I can understand why residents may be frustrated that Enviromina's solar farm connection works are taking longer than originally envisaged. I am advised that the work has overrun due to issues with connecting the ducts that will carry the new cables." And there's a lovely picture of a very bright, modern-looking pub. I think I might go there for lunch.
And a tasty little article on ice cream with lower carbon footprint. A family-run ice cream company from Hampshire has continued its expansion by launching 2 new products. Jude's, which started in a barn in Easton and now operates from a unit in Twyford, has added plant-based caramel peanut sticks to its range of vegan ice cream sticks. It has also launched a new light Madagascan vanilla custard with 30% less fat and sugar. Chow Mesger, Jude's MD, said, "Our new caramel peanut sticks are a rich, creamy treat that is about all-out indulgence that's better for the planet. They have a wonderful roasted nut flavour, sweetened by our velvety vegan caramel ice cream. We're also excited that the sticks are made with Rainforest Alliance cocoa for both people and nature." The new ice cream sticks have been launched as part of Jude's pledge to make 50% of its range plant-based by 2025. Jude's plant-based ice cream has on average a 40% lower carbon footprint than its dairy ice cream. The new custard is made with Madagascan bourbon vanilla extract and double cream, but with 30% less fat and sugar. Chow added, "Here at Jude's, we love our treats, and a smooth, glossy custard always adds warmth to your favourite pud. Our new light Madagascan vanilla custard does just that."
Lottery funds for new role. A charity's been awarded a grant which will fund a new position, supporting its network of volunteers. Winchester Go LD has been granted £47,000 from the National Lottery Community Fund to develop volunteering projects in the community. The charity, which supports adults with learning disabilities, will use the funding for new volunteer coordinator role for over 3 years. In 2021, 40 volunteers donated a total of 60,000 hours to Winchester Go LD, and now the charity's facing peak demand. CEO Betty Chadwick said, "Winchester Go LD volunteers make up a broad range of people from our community, sixth form students, undergraduates, retired academics, employees from corporate sponsors, local social enterprise groups and project partners, parents, families and friends of Winchester Go LD members. As the charity's grown, so has the need to recruit, manage and support volunteers. Our volunteers are key to the success of our charity. They help us in enabling adults with learning disabilities to live life to the full with the independence and choices that they want. The need for our work is higher than ever, and Winchester Go LD is keen to develop and respond to the pressures faced by our members during these challenging times. The National Lottery Committee Fund will enable the charity to employ a volunteer coordinator over 3 years and provide training, review policies, and explore and coordinate volunteer opportunities."
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 4th of November 2022. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And of course, thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.